Good morning and welcome to this month's Hancock & Whitney Bank's Economic Update Call. Hancock Bank and Whitney Bank provide this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. If you have any questions, please email them to david.lundgren@hancockbank.com and he'll take them at the end of the call. Today we have Chief Investment Officer John Portwood and Investment Directors Greg Hudlewski, David Lundgren, Luther McDougall, and Jeffrey Tangus. And with that, I'll pass it on to the moderator, David Lundgren.
Great. Thank you, Ashley, and good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of our monthly economic update call. Portwood, John, we'll start with you, and I guess the big geopolitical news event has been the Russia and Ukraine situation. This week, Putin publicly stated that he would not invade Ukraine. A few questions. Do you believe him? And how does this situation play out going forward?
You know, I guess all of us would like to believe that he's telling the truth and that he's actually not going to invade. And chances are he's really not interested in creating a much more serious incident. However, it does look after, taking control of Crimea and seeing what kind of weak response he got from the U.S. and from Europe, it's like a shark that smells blood in the water. He probably figures, well, let's see what else I can do. So he masses troops on the border of the Ukraine, and he starts talking about, or maybe if he didn't start talking about it, some Russian officials did, of letting, why don't we let the various regions in the Ukraine decide their own fate, i.e., let's get eastern Ukraine on Russia's side. And there are a lot of Russians and Russian-leaning people living in eastern Ukraine where all the industry is. And so, why not just do another Crimean situation and, have the eastern Ukrainians invite him in, so to speak. And that's probably why he was using troops on the border as an intimidation tactic, more or less. At least, that's what I've been able to gather by looking at various sources of information. Assuming that the current talks that are in progress, lead to, a continuation of the status quo for a while, it's certainly going to be with us for a long time, and it's not likely that we'll see, a complete lessening of tension unless we, finally, and the Europeans finally agree to just back off completely and, just not worry about Crimea anymore. But 30 to 40%, maybe that's a little bit too high. It depends on the countries involved. But, a large percentage of gas and energy supplies that are imported from Russia in Europe account for a good portion of their power needs. And, it's not likely that they're going to make, too much noise for fear that the gas lines might be cut off at some point. And certainly, I guess that's a, the threat's always out there that if hostilities begin and something, unusual happens, then, we got some problems.
So let's look at a couple of different scenarios, status quo, no military intervention. What's the impact on the market economy? Is it basically a non-event?
It's probably not a non-event in the sense that nothing happens in the short run. I guess that's a positive. The problem is that it adds another factor, sort of a return to the Cold War kind of situation, in the world economy that is certainly not a positive. So, it's probably a long-term negative. How to measure it, of course, is the real issue. You don't really know how negative it might be. There are some other things going on that we might have mentioned before around the world from the standpoint of changes in social mood and political fractiousness and all that. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of, political upheaval going on in the Eurozone for obvious reasons. And around the world, we see movements toward secessionist ideas. Catalonia wants to leave Spain. Scotland wants to leave the UK. There are even some counties in Northern California that want to leave, California and form their own state. And there's more than that going on around the world. So there's a lot of stuff happening now that, wasn't around, 5 or 10 years ago. That probably overall has some sort of dampening effect on economic activity. But, I guess it's not critical enough to send us over the edge.
And if military does get involved, I guess all bets are off.
There's if we start getting military action and, you know, Russia moves into eastern Ukraine, you know, in force and, you know, some sort of, you know, and the Ukrainians decide to, you know, meet them, then, you know, yeah, like you say, all bets are off.
Okay. All right, great. Thanks. Now let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the U.S. economy. And fourth quarter GDP registered a 2.6% year-over-year reading. Pretty good, kind of what we've been expecting and seeing over the last few years. And I guess in the first quarter, it seems like the economy has started to find its footing a little bit. I know there was some poor economic readings when we went through the severe cold weather events really across the whole country. It definitely seemed to dampen or have a negative impact on the economy, but I guess as of late, things seem to have improved. Give me your thoughts on that. First quarter, what's the outlook? More of the same?
First quarter estimates now seem to be clustering around 1.5%. At least, you know, that seems to be what I've picked up lately.
And is that if you had to break the quarter into segments, weaker in the beginning, middle, and then
weaker in the beginning? Yeah, obviously the cold weather had some kind of an impact. Mm-hmm. There are also some other factors involved that are, well, I don't know if you describe them as being necessarily weak in the sense that, you know, it's leading us into recession, but certainly there are some indications out there that all of that weakness in the last quarter was not weather-related. I mean, there were some other things going on, and the housing, for one thing, is kind of an interesting situation. We may have talked about this before, but the first-time home buyer has been basically a no-show during this recovery for kind of obvious reasons. People don't have as much money, you know, larger down payments are required, and so forth and so on. But the cash buyer really started things off, you know, after the crash. And, you know, we see estimates that depending on what part of the country you're talking about, 30 to 50% of all the sales have been for cash. Well, apparently the cash buyers now are largely done, and they're backing away, which leaves the market to be supported by first-time buyers and people who are actually taking out mortgages to live in the house. And if you look at the mortgage purchase index that tracks that type of activity, it obviously has been declining from a peak in 2006-2007. It declined into 2010, and it's basically flatlined ever since. So if you look at the Shiller numbers, which have indicated, you know, a little bit of price softness in recent weeks, and talk to Professor Shiller about it, Shiller will say, well, you know, we're now getting back to a normal housing market, which means that the majority of the price gains we've seen since the low are probably over. And from this point going forward, you're going to get back to what he would describe as a more normal market that's driven by actually people buying houses to live in them. And, so whatever additional impact housing might have provided for the economy in the early years, that's probably fading a bit at this point. Not that we're about to have a recession, but certainly it looks like there's very little reason to expect a sudden surge to, you know, get us up to 3.5%, 4% GDP growth consistently. Although, you know, the hope is there for 3% GDP growth to be, you know, something that would describe what happens in the second half of the year. But currently there's not much, you know, there's not much out there that would suggest we're going to be much more than where we are, you know, that 2.5% year-over-year type of situation.
The people that are in the 3% camp for the second half of the year, what is the rationale or the thought process that takes us to that scenario?
Several things. Rising wages. There's been some hint lately that wages are beginning to rise a bit. Also, there's some hope that capital spending by companies will come back in the second half of the year. And right now, you really can't see a lot of evidence of that. But you know, looking at, you know, I guess you know, the working life of, you know various, you know, buildings, equipment, and so forth and so on, you're probably reaching the point where companies have to do some spending or some more spending relative to what has happened in the past. So So that, you know, that's I guess, you know, provides some optimism going forward. But again, it looks like, you know, if we are in a different era, and the baby boomers that drove everything from, you know, 1965 into 2005, I guess, because that was such a huge part of the economy and was really driving GDP growth. You know, that crowd is retiring now, and the demographics just don't make any sense, you know, for, I guess, you know, much stronger growth going forward. But still, you know, if you're in a 2-2.5% mode, I mean, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
On the bright side, you know, we don't see anything that suggests we're about to go into recession. And, of course, the leading indicators that we look at are probably only good for about, I don't know, 3-4 months in advance, I guess, as a signaling indicator. But, you know, so far, so good. You know, it looks like recession is not in the cards.
Okay. Brad, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, March turned out to be slightly positive, and that was really buoyed by yesterday. We had a really strong close to the month, strong close to the quarter. The S&P 500 finished up 0.8% for the month, which puts the year-to-date number at 1.8%. Small cap stocks didn't fare as well as measured by the Russell 2000, down slightly at negative 0.7%, but still up for the year, positive 1.1%. So, you know, not a great quarter, but it's positive, and we'll take it. And the one thing that we've talked about as a team is that I think we've seen a little bit more volatility this year than maybe we did in 2013. And maybe 2013 is the out-of-ordinary situation, and this is a more normal market environment. But give me your thoughts on the volatility that we perceive to see, and then give us your thoughts on where we go for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think that's good insight. I mean, I think when you have a market like we did last year where you just continually climb, obviously the volatility is biased. I mean, it's muted because you just keep going up. And I don't think it's a surprise to anyone that after such a strong year last year that, you know, some more volatility in a more normal market environment would probably precipitate during 2014. We actually saw about a 20% rise in the VIX, and the VIX, again, is a volatility index on the Chicago Board Options Exchange. We've talked about that in previous calls. And it was kind of averaging around 14.5 most of the month, but we saw a huge spike to about 18 in the middle of the month. And, you know, it's not surprising. I mean, the things – just looking at some of the headlines over the past month – U.S. stocks drop on economy. U.S. stocks retreat with emerging equities. U.S. stocks rally with ruble. U.S. stocks retreat on Obama remarks on Ukraine. U.S. stocks rise on housing data. U.S. stocks rebound on economy. U.S. stocks retreat on copper plunging. I mean, we were all over the board with information. You know, and I think the primary drivers, the first one probably is the slowdown in China. You know, there's a lot of China's, you know, the huge juggernaut, and of course China drives the emerging market economy. So if China slows down, then you start seeing a lot of weakness in the emerging markets, which then translates into weakness in the emerging market economy, which of course then adds to global uncertainty, and that kind of spills over into our stock market. The other tie-in with China, of course, is that China is just a huge consumer of commodities. And commodities are a big driver of inflation. Now, of course, we don't want to see inflation go through the roof, but the Federal Reserve would like to see a moderate amount of inflation so that we do see some price rising, which ultimately would indicate an improving economy. The other issue, of course, and you know, John spent some time on it, was the UK and the Russian situation, and now, there's not really a direct impact to our economy. We're not big trading partners necessarily with that area of the world, but there is a big connection between Europe, as John pointed out. It's a huge Russia provides an enormous amount of energy to overall Europe. That's why you've seen such a muted response. I think something the other day, they said that the G7 meetings would be Angela Merkel said that the G7 meetings would be canceled, as opposed to saying to Russia, you can't join our party and we're going to have a G6 meeting. So again, they took a pretty soft line to that. So again, that and the fear of escalation and what that could mean to the geopolitical economy certainly, again, injects more volatility into the U.S. stock market. The next one that I think was a factor in what happened in the market was, of course, the Federal Reserve and its tapering of its bond buying program. I mean, that's certainly an issue on traders' minds. I think it certainly goes back into the background once in a while, but every time that the Fed does make a statement, and last month they not only made some hawkish, but again, they backtracked a little bit. So there were, at least the way the markets interpreted it, that the Fed would increase the tapering program because they saw some more positive signs in the economy. And, you know, if that's the case, obviously that brings closer the possibility of moving from tapering to actually rising interest rates, which, again, spooks the stock and bond markets. But then they backtracked again, and I think it was one of the governors, I think it's, what's his name, Plosser, had mentioned that really the Fed is kind of in the middle, that the hurdle to increase or move faster towards tightening, the hurdle rate there is equally as high as the need to continue to provide liquidity to the market. So we're kind of in that middle zone where we're still weak, but it looks like there's signs of the market heating up or the economy heating up, so they could go either way at this point. Again, and I think we've mentioned it in previous calls, the Fed moves are really going to be driven. They're going to be data dependent, and, you know, it's just too impossible to predict. You know, the GDP numbers that I saw just this morning or the other day for 2014 and 2015 really have come in, because I think at the beginning of the year people were a little bit more optimistic as usual, you know, talking around the 3% level, even 3.5% level. And the numbers that I was seeing from one of our research providers was more like the 2 to 2.5% range, pretty consistently across four quarters of 2014 and across the four quarters of 2015. So we'll see how that turns out. And then I think the final thing, or I shouldn't say the final thing, the economy, obviously, again, we're just lumping along. We're getting mixed signals. The weather certainly provided, or at least that's the excuse, is that the weather dampened consumer spending. And we did see weaker consumer spending numbers. And so, of course, again, consumer spending translates into GDP, because consumer spending is about 75% or 70% of GDP. So if people aren't out there buying, you're not going to see that pushing GDP up. So again, there was some improvement in stocks rallied on it as some of the numbers, and I think it was the jobs numbers, there was a consensus estimate of something like 145,000, and it actually came into the upside at 175. So again, that was kind of a positive surprise. And then ultimately, I think the final thing is valuations. We're still concerned about the valuations. I'm not sure that the market, you do have a lot of the popular media either calling this a bubble or a rally. I'm not sure that we're necessarily at that point. There's certainly some justification. There was a recent piece that I saw that Fidelity had done, and it looked at P.E. ratios, multiple different measures of P.E. ratios, going back to something like 1960, and it also looked at earnings growth in different economic sectors. And if you go back to, say, like 2000 during the tech bubble, I remember it very well that you had a situation where technology stocks made up 35% of the S&P 500, but in terms of the earnings proportion of the S&P 500, it was only 16%. We don't have that situation today for the most part. You know, if you're about 10% of the index, 10% of the earnings are coming from that sector. If you're 15% of that index, about 15% of the earnings are coming from that sector. So there's a little bit more legitimacy, I think, to what we're seeing in terms of earnings and the market rise from an earnings basis. However, again, looking at some of the earnings expectations, we're seeing still a lot more companies providing negative guidance, that's actually turning their earnings estimates down as opposed to up, which is not what we wanted to see. I think last month, you know, we talked about that divergence, that if earnings don't maintain and prices keep going up, that PE is just going to inflate, again, kind of exacerbating the valuation issue.
One follow-up question, John, and chime in if you'd like. One thing that I think has really helped this market is corporate America has done a tremendous job of growing earnings at a rate that's been faster than the economic growth or GDP growth, and a lot of it is because of increasing profit margins. And is that something that we can see continue, or is at some point does that have to flatten out or even decline?
That's a big question these days. If you look at the history of profit margins, they are mean reverting in a sense. And profit margins now have grown a lot, and they're at all-time highs, really, as far as I can tell. We haven't seen anything like this in decades, I suppose. History would suggest that mean reversion is coming, and that and when you think about it logically, it makes sense. If somebody's got a monopoly out there and they're making high profit margins, at some point somebody's going to erode that away competitively. But in any case, we probably are looking at a situation where profit margins will decline, and at some point you are going to get a reduction in earnings. And you can, this is what some people don't really think about, you can get a decline in earnings and not have a recession, just as you can have a recession and not necessarily
a decline in earnings.
So it's
long term, they're generally tied together, but I just think this is
there's a big divergence now. I mean, you can find charts and look at it, and profit margins are significantly elevated from where they used to be.
Okay. Yeah, I also think you have to look at it at an industry level too. I mean, there's certain industries that obviously are in a growth mode as opposed to some that are in mature industries, and that, in kind of a perverse way, I think a lot of the profit margins have had the ability to grow because they haven't hired back a lot of labor. And as most people know, if you run a business, your biggest cost is your human resource cost. So a combination of layoffs and not hiring people back and the implementation of technology has allowed those profit margins to increase. So overall, there's probably going to be some reversion to the mean, but again, within, I think, selected sectors or selected industries, you still probably have some reasonably good prospects for margin expansion.
Okay, great point. Thank you, guys. Luther, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Janet Yellen has been on the tape quite a bit. Yesterday, she had a speech that excited the market quite a bit. A lot of her comments were interpreted as being very dovish or easy. Do you agree? And what do you think the Fed's action is going forward?
I agree. I think the Fed's action going forward is still up in the air. They did, or Chairperson Yellen had her first meeting on March 19th, and from everything that we've been able to see, it wasn't a consensus agreement on what they said. If you look at the Fed itself, it has what's called a dual mandate, meaning that their job is to keep inflation at reasonable levels and to promote full employment. And we know that prior to the last meeting, they've been saying that they were going to continue to reduce their buying or tapering, but that any increase in interest rates was going to be a long way off. At the first meeting, in her post-meeting press conference, Yellen said they really now have three mandates, one they've put on themselves, and that is to keep inflation low, and their target is 2% or lower. The unemployment number, they lowered the target from 6.5% to anywhere between 5.2% to 5.6%. And then she added one more thing that they're really watching, and that's financial stability. And that comes up every once in a while in comments from a Fed member or has historically, but it's not that common. So they're worried about maybe some of the excesses out there in the market. It's not an irrational exuberance comment like we got from Greenspan, but it is a note the Fed is keeping an eye on everything. And you mentioned yesterday that the market was up a lot of the on comments by Yellen, and she had made a comment after the first meeting that they expected to raise rates a considerable amount of time after the tapering was finished. The tapering is expected to finish in December. She was asked what's a considerable amount of time, and she said 6 months, which I'm not sure she meant to say, and that kind of hurt the market right after the Fed meeting. Now, yesterday, when the market was up so much, it was because she came out and she said that the economy and the job market are not back to normal. The recovery still feels like a recession to many Americans, and it also looks that way in some economic statistics. So the outlook is still kind of up in the air. Greg mentioned that Plosser is one of the hawks. He would like to raise interest rates much sooner. I think her comment about the three mandates, inflation, unemployment, financial stability, was a consensus-making move, and that there are varying degrees of outlooks as far as when interest rates will need to be increased by the different Fed members. But she's putting her weight on it's going to be quite a while, maybe a year after the Fed tapers. She gave some examples of some individuals who were having trouble finding work. She left out part of the problem, but in general, she was trying to make what they're calling an impassioned plea to everybody, I would assume, especially the other FOMC members, that we need to keep rates low because the things just really are not improving in any reasonable manner. They're, you know, we've talked about GDP very, very low. The only thing that's doing well is corporate profits. Consumer spending is modest. So I would stick with what she says and believe that, and that rates are going to remain low for an extended period of time, at least on the very short-term end of the curve. You might see some rates pick up longer maturity bonds, the 10-year or so, but not a whole lot. We're still stuck in the same mode we've been for the last 5 years, and it looks like we're going to be there for another 6 months to a year.
All right. Thank you, Luther. Jeff?
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, not a very exciting March for bonds, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. 10-year moves slightly up about 5 basis points from 265 to 270. I guess that's really just noise. So give us your outlook on rates in light of some of the Fed's comments as of late, and then maybe talk a little bit about the month and maybe some of the sectors that did well, didn't do well.
Sure. Well, you're right. Bonds were boring during the month of March. They've been relatively boring all year, but remember, bonds are supposed to be boring. If you want excitement, you need to go to the equity markets. Bonds are where people go for safety and security, and that's really what we've seen for the month and really so far for this year. I think in a couple meetings, in recent meetings, we talked about last year, and it was the first negative year in the bond market in quite some time. And I made the comment that going back 30 years, we haven't had two negative years in the bond market in the last 30 years. So it looked like, despite the negativity coming out of last year, that there was a good chance that this year was going to be a pretty good year, generally speaking, for bonds. And the first quarter has certainly borne that out. If you just look at what's happened so far for the first 3 months of the year, we'll sort of recap that, and it applies to the month of March as well. Bonds, you've collected some income. You've collected your income, your interest rate on the bond, and then you've gotten a little bit of price appreciation along the way on both the taxable and the tax-exempt side. Most people will remember that last year was a really tough year for the tax-exempt market, the municipal market, because of really some heavy selling pressure by bond funds towards the middle of the year. But what we've seen this year is a reversal of that. John talked about reversion to the mean, and I think that's been the theme so far for the first quarter here. in bonds and certainly on the tax-exempt side. As we sit here today, the 10-year is right around 2.75%, the 10-year Treasury, which in meetings past we've talked about the bonds basically trading back and forth somewhere between maybe 2.5, 2.75, up to 3.25, but maybe drifting a little bit higher by the end of this year. And it's been really quiet. One of the reasons that the bond yields have been low and staying low, certainly the aggression by Russia put some uncertainty into the market that helped support bond prices and keep interest rates low on Treasury securities. There's been a couple pockets of weakness on the economic side. We've talked about that a little bit today. So all that really has worked together to keep a lid on interest rates, keep them from rising, and really keep the bond market fairly stable so far for this year. One thing that has been different this year that's a little different from last year is that things like the mortgage market, the mortgage sector last year was one of the worst performing sectors. This year it's one of the best performing. I think the stability in rates has had a lot to do with that, but that's one area that has been a good performer in addition to corporate bonds, which continues to be a great place to invest money. And as all of our clients know, that is a primary place where we like to invest money and has been for quite some time. On the tax-exempt side, the first quarter and certainly the month of March has been a stellar quarter. Our two tax-exempt bond funds are up over 5% and 6% so far for the first quarter. That's certainly been one of the big performers in terms of mutual funds. The long-term municipal bond market has come roaring back, and again, in a reversion to the mean, was heavily oversold coming out of last year, and clients who have stuck with that particular investment have been rewarded handsomely. Where we sit today, municipal rates still are attractive. Some parts of the curve more attractive than others. The 10-year part of the curve is especially attractive. If you look at a 10-year AAA municipal security, it's about 2.8%. A 10-year Treasury is about 2.75%, so it actually yields more than a Treasury security. So you get a AAA tax-exempt security that yields higher than does a Treasury security. That's almost a no-brainer in the investment world. So anytime you get tax-exempt yields 100% of Treasury securities, then that's always a good investment. It's not quite such a good comparison when you go shorter term. Most of the world is trying to be short term right in here, so the better values are out past 5 years. But generally speaking, municipal securities still offer good value compared to taxable securities. So we're off to a good start so far in the fixed income world this year. And as we get through the year and if the economy does continue to improve, we may see a little pressure for rates to drift higher. But again, we're not looking for any dramatic moves higher in interest rates, primarily because the Federal Reserve doesn't want to see that happen. The housing market can't withstand dramatically higher interest rates. So there's going to be a lot of pressure to prevent rates from rising dramatically, certainly on the Federal Reserve side, because of the other weak spots in the economy.
All right. Thank you very much, Jeff. And thank you, everyone, for joining. Our call next month will be Tuesday, May 6th. Please join us again for another update. And we'll conclude there. Thank you very much.